This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. In December, we did a show called Public Transport in the Klang Valley. Are we on the right track? In that episode, we took a look at our transit network in Greater Kuala Lumpur and the philosophy and policies that guide our public transport infrastructure development. On today's episode, we will be taking a look at public transport beyond the Klang Valley, cities and states outside of Selangor, outside of Kuala Lumpur. Once again, joining me to discuss this is Nishal Muniandi, public policy researcher and committee member of Transit Malaysia. Nishal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So when we talked about public transportation in the Klang Valley in our previous episode, I think we did it in last December, we focused on mainly MRT, LRT, monorail. We touched a little bit on KLIA Express, the ETS, a little bit KTM as well. What should we focus on when discussing public transportation beyond the Klang Valley?
Right. When we talk about public transport outside the Klang Valley, the biggest thing that we should be focusing on is improving bus frequencies for bus providers and bus services outside the Klang Valley. To quote the American public transport planner, Jared Walker, frequency is freedom. Just to give you an example of how the current situation is for bus services outside the Klang Valley, in Malacca, Panorama Malacca has exactly one service that runs at least half an hour, which is from Malacca Central to Ujung Pasir. Every other bus service that Panorama Malacca runs every 1.5 hours at best. So if you miss your bus, you're waiting 1.5 hours. In Negeri Sembilan, my bus runs every 1 hour during peak times and every 1.5 hours outside of peak times. In Terengganu, my bus Terengganu runs every 1 hour all day except for a half an hour city centre loop service that mainly hits a lot of very touristy areas. And in some other cities, like in Alusta, finding a bus is almost like finding a unicorn. You can barely see it. This is why outside of Klang Valley, there's very, very low ridership in public transport. The frequencies are just not there. Once you start improving frequencies, you'll start to see more people using public transport.
So in our previous episode, you mentioned that public transportation in the Klang Valley is decent, not great. Certainly, we need to keep pushing for it to improve, but it is at least on the right track, better than cities such as Los Angeles. How would you describe public transportation in Malaysia beyond the Klang Valley, especially when we think about states outside Selangor?
For public transport outside of Klang Valley, most of them are almost very skeletal. They are entirely meant for getting commuters from to and from the city centre, and that's it. And as I said, the frequencies are very low and there's not much investment in these services.
How do we compare to other countries on this regard? Because I think sometimes there is a tendency to just say, okay, Malaysia's public transport is not as good as Singapore. But perhaps, at least from my vantage point, that's slightly of an unfair comparison because Singapore is a city state. So I think it's fair if you want to compare Klang Valley to Singapore or pick a city and compare to Singapore, but perhaps not the whole country. How do you see that, and how do we compare to, let's say, countries like the US, Indonesia, in this part of the world, Australia perhaps? When we look at a national level, how do we compare?
When we look at a national level, I would say Malaysia is very sort of middling to okay when it comes to our public transport. Just comparing to our regional peers, we are actually a lot like Indonesia, where we focus our public transport development on a single big city. They focus their public transport development on Jakarta, where we've seen things like the new Jabodetabek LRT, which is meant to connect the whole Greater Jakarta region, Jakarta LRT, which is just within the city of Jakarta itself. And as you know, the at Jakarta MRT. But outside of it, there's not much investment in cities outside of Jakarta. I think same goes with Malaysia. A lot of investment is in the Klang Valley, but very little investment is outside of it, save for some key regions like, say, Greater JB or Greater Penang.
Do you think that we did the right thing in that, you know, like you said, it's parallel to what Indonesia did, in that we focus large sums of our investment in one big city? And that big city, while not amazing yet, is, like we said, actually pretty decent. It's getting better and better, right? But the rest of Malaysia, like you said, it's very middling. Was that the right approach? If, let's say, you know, I mean, we can't turn back time, but just to understand it better, if, let's say, we move back 20 years ago, 30 years ago, would it have been better to spread out that investment across Malaysia or do what we did, which is focus on one big city first?
I think what we did is very understandable, given that most economic development period is focused on the Klang Valley. And most inflow, most population growth is in the Klang Valley. Just from the number of people who move here to seek better opportunities, to seek work. Right now, if I'm not mistaken, Greater Klang Valley is about, population about 8 million in Klang Valley. That's about a quarter of the whole country's population. So in that sense, at least that one quarter of the population has access to decent public transport by virtue of living in the single biggest urban area in the country. But I think now that that's the case, we also have to focus on sort of regional centres or secondary cities like JB and Penang that are also now growing very quickly, becoming industrial and economic centres in their own right, to also have their own public transport investment and to make sure that they get the investment that they need.
How do you evaluate public transportation at a national level? Do you look at key cities? So now that KL and Greater Kuala Lumpur, the Klang Valley is on the right track, next we move to JB, then we move to Penang, and then we perhaps go to Ipoh. Is it that, or are we looking at urban-rural connectivity? Are we looking at how fast we can travel from JB to Penang? What are the markers when you try to evaluate public transport at national level? What are the markers that you use?
See, I mainly, main markers to look at would be three very key criteria for any public transport system: frequency, reliability, and speed of service. Why frequency? Because you don't want to wait for the public transport forever. You don't want to wait half an hour, 1 hour, 1.5 hours for any form of public transport. And that's not just for buses, that also includes rail. You can ask any KTM commuter user how that feels like. Second is reliability. You want your service to be there and to be reliably on time. It's no use running a service that's on paper very good, but when you go to the stop or you go to the station, the bus or the train isn't there and you have to wait longer. This is especially for bus, because the bus gets caught in traffic or the bus just doesn't show up. And when you break that trust with your users or your commuters, they'll just say, why should I bother taking public transport? I can just drive. And last is speed of service. I'm sure that a lot of people, even in Klang Valley, will say, I don't take public transport because it takes way too long for me to get somewhere, even with jam. So, for example, I used to commute from Petaling Jaya to Glen Mary, Shah Alam. Mm-hmm. And by car, it is 45 minutes, including the jam along like NKVE, at the Subang Toll, at Jalan Glen Mary, Pasiran Kejaya, including all of that traffic, is 45 minutes to 1 hour.
Right.
If I use public transport, easily 1.5 to 2 hours. So it is not an option for me at all. Once you have these three fundamentals in place, then that's a great public transport system.
What do you think are some of the best cities or cities with the best or most efficient public transportation connectivity network services outside of Kuala Lumpur and the Klang Valley?
Second best would definitely be Penang. Because Penang, like Klang Valley, has some frequent bus routes. So for those in Wangsa Maju, Jalan Genting, Klang, you know about 250, which is supposed to come every 5 to 10 minutes. Those living in Ampang will know about 300, which is also supposed to come every 5 to 10 minutes. Penang has 101, which goes from Pengkalan Weld to Teluk Bahang in the north. That comes every 10 to 15 minutes. There's also bus routes like 201, which connects Georgetown to Ai Tam, and 701 that connects Penang Central on the mainland next to Butterworth train station to Bukit Mentajam. Plus, there's also, and it has a very affordable public transport pass, which is Pass Mutiara.
Right.
You pay 10 ringgit, every subsequent monthly renewal is free because it is subsidized by the Penang State Government. And third is JB, just because of the sheer number of people commuting between JB and Singapore, the buses to and from JB Central are very frequent, sometimes 5 to 10 minutes, just to handle the number of people crossing the causeway.
Right. So that's an interesting point you bring up about, you know, the number of people, because the volume is so incredibly high when it comes to JB Singapore, then you have these buses every 5 to 10 minutes. Is it a case, or could it be argued that the reason why in a lot of other places, let's say even here, right, in the Klang Valley, when I say here, I mean the Klang Valley, you don't have that buses every 5 to 10 minutes because the demand is not as high as the commuters of JB to Singapore and vice versa. I think some people bring up that argument that there's just not enough demand and the frequency matches the demand. How would you respond to that?
You can't judge demand for a bridge by the number of people willing to swim across a river. So when Rapid KL improved frequency and reliability on the 300 route by putting up bus lanes on Jalan Ampang, just during peak hours, ridership increased by 15%. So the demand is there. We can't assume the demand isn't there. But like I said, most people look at their bus timetable and go, hey, I have to wait half an hour for a bus that will be stuck in traffic, which will take one long tour of the whole Taman before I get to where I want to go.
Right.
Might as well drive.
Absolutely. Now, when we talk about public transportation, even when we discuss public transportation beyond the Klang Valley, looking at other states, not just in Selangor, often the focus tends to be bigger projects, the LRT projects that could potentially take place, the MRT projects, the HSRs that connects cities together and all of that. And we will touch on all of that a little bit later. But I think you bring up a very important point earlier, you know, back to basics, where you said, the most important thing that the people should be doing right now when we look at public transport outside the Klang Valley is focus on bus networks, focus on improving bus frequencies. Could you expand on that? Why is that the most important thing that people should be focusing on?
Because the bus is the workhorse of our public transport system. It is the nerve that connects everything together. And for cities outside the Klang Valley that might not get, like you said, the billions in funding for things like new MRT or LRT, it is a very cost-effective way to kickstarting a good public transport system. I'll say that for every city or urban area above 250,000 or so, which includes places like Kuantan and Kota Baru and Sungai Petani, there should be at least two frequent bus routes that crisscross north to south for cities with ETS, it should connect with the ETS station, it should connect to their main bus hub, and it should have things like bus lanes, signal priority at the traffic light, so the bus doesn't have to stop to keep the service reliable. And that's the sort of thing that will actually get more people to use public transport.
Now, one thing I am personally very fascinated about when we look, and this goes back to the bigger projects, is the ETS. And one of the reasons I'm very fascinated by this is because my hometown is Johor Bahru. And number two, I hate driving. I drive a lot, but that's because of frequencies and whatnot, which we have discussed and will continue to discuss. But I most of the time, I enjoy taking the train, even within the Klang Valley and all of that. And even long distance traveling, ideally, I prefer to take the train. And before this, let's say if you travel from JB to KL, if you drive, take you 4 hours, maybe 3.5, 3 hours, 15 minutes. And then if you take the KTM train, it'll take up to 7 hours, which is just ridiculous, right? Then why would anybody want to do that unless you don't own a car, right? Now we have the ETS. I think it already connects from KL upwards north to Penang, and then it goes downwards to Gemas, and then from Gemas in Negeri Sembilan to JB is the final stretch that they are in, that's currently in construction and should launch, I think, end of this year or early next year, sometime like that. What do you think of the ETS as a whole? How popular is the ETS? And do you think that it's a good replacement of what the KTM was?
Was it a good replacement for what KTM was? In one word, yes. Because taking the KTM, the old diesel train from KL Central to Butterworth, used to take 8 hours.
Right.
And now it takes somewhere in the 4 hour range.
That's pretty much like driving.
Yes, it is competitive with driving. It is a lot faster than driving during festive seasons.
Right.
Which is what you see in the month or so leading up to any big festive period, like Chinese New Year, Deepavali, Raya, the ETS is fully booked. That is why every time, and this is with KTM introducing additional services to cater to this demand, it is fully booked because most people look at the road, look at the highway, they say, well, I'm not waking up at 3 in the morning for a marginally faster drive home. I'm just taking the train.
Right.
So you can see just from that, it is doing very well. KTM just needs to be able to run more trains.
On the show with me today is Nishal Muniandi, public policy researcher and committee member of Transit Malaysia. We'll continue this discussion after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Nishal Muniandi, public policy researcher and a committee member of Transit Malaysia. And we're talking about public transportation beyond the Klang Valley. Are we on the right track? So, Nishal, what are some of the common challenges faced when it comes to developing, maintaining public transport systems? And how do the challenges differ from the challenges of developing and maintaining public transportation in the Klang Valley?
Biggest challenge for outside the Klang Valley would probably be funding. Because as we discussed earlier, a lot of the funding is focused on Klang Valley. So if you're someone in, say, Kuala Terengganu or smaller place like Mersing, Wah, and you say, oh, I want to improve the public transport in my town or city, you're less likely to get the sort of funding. And outside of the Klang Valley, some cities are looking at very sort of gadget barney sort of solutions. Like they think, oh, this techno solution will be the one thing that will fix the public transport system. For example, one example would be the ART in Kuching, which is essentially a hydrogen-powered articulated bus. But it's seen as, oh, this is a very new technological solution. It will fix public transport in Kuching. But one, there's no silver bullet to public transport. like I say, if you have to focus on the key fundamentals, frequency, reliability, and speed of service, that's about it.
Has there been a decline in the number of buses we see on the road? Because, especially outside of the Klang Valley, because anecdotally, like whenever I go back to JB, my dad and my family, they will discuss how at one time when they were growing up in JB, in their 20s, you know, they would take the buses everywhere and things like that. It wasn't perfect, but you could take the bus. And now they talk about how there's barely any buses on the roads, unless you're talking about deep in the heart of the city centre, connecting to Singapore and things like that. Is that true, like that at one point we did tend to focus on buses, or at least have a lot more buses, and over the years our buses, the number of buses on the roads and all just started to reduce?
In our parents' time, a lot of these bus services were done completely by private companies. Hmm. It's still the same case in JB today, as you can see. I'm sure you've seen that when you go back, there's a lot of different bus companies plying the routes in when you go to see JB City Centre, and you see lots of different types of buses and all different types of colours and liveries. And that used to be the case like across the country. You ask any old-timer from Penang and they'll talk about things like the red bus, the blue bus, the yellow bus.
Right.
Before it all got amalgamated into Rapid Penang. Mm. And the problem was that one was that we focused on car-centric development. In a sense, we wanted to emulate what the US and a lot of Western countries were doing, which is that the way forward for development was personal freedom. What was personal freedom? The car. You can drive anywhere you want, whenever you want, wherever you want. And what was the key to unlocking the car? Wider roads, more highways. And once and making the car more affordable for the masses, Prata and Peredua. So once more and more people started having their own cars, and once that sort of hit a threshold, now car ownership is essentially universal in Malaysia. Most people just go, why should I take the bus? That led to the bus systems collapsing. And in Penang, that led them to being amalgamated under the Rapid Penang system. So you can actually see traces of these old bus systems, but when you look at, for example, the one systems which all go north, they're all just the old routes put under Rapid Penang. The routes haven't really changed all that much. Hmm.
If you ask most people on the street, Nishal, I don't think it's a stretch to say that they would tell you that public transport is important, or they would complain about, like I just said, you know, the lack of buses and trains these days. So why is it so difficult to get the political class to build public transportation infrastructure? But at the same time, highway projects regularly get approved. Even if you look at within the Klang Valley, right? I mean, just look at PJD Link. How many times do we have to fight with the government that most Selangor people voted for? The government that we voted for, you have to fight against them because they keep on, or at least there's rumours and rumblings about, you know, at one point they'll say it's cancelled, then the project will come back. So it feels like, you know, when it comes to these massive highway projects, you know, it is so difficult to get politicians to stop the project and give their word firmly. But when we want to ask the, you know, political class to just build one bus stop in front of our neighbourhood, or, you know, the kind of organising that needs to be done, and so on and so forth, why is that the case?
On one hand, a lot of Malaysians are also very wedded to their cars. Hmm. They love to drive. Like, for example, like just here on BFM, the inside story on malls in the Klang Valley, mm-hmm. when a lot of people talked about what are their favourite malls, what's one of the most universal things they brought up when they say, this mall is my favourite mall?
Parking.
Got a lot of parking.
Right.
And then it's nearby, no jam. What's the one thing that a lot of Malaysians used to bring up when talking about previous governments? Petrol price is too high. Car is too expensive. We're a car addicted nation. A lot of people love to drive. Mm. If not love to drive, they're just like, this is normal. This is the way things are. And as you said, when governments look into funding public transportation, they look into either very big mega projects like MRT, LRT, which is also seen as a way to do sort of urban renewal, to increase investment, or when it's with buses. Buses are almost seen like a welfare project. It's like, oh, if you're too poor to afford a car, here, I guess, have a very convoluted looking bus route. It comes every 45 minutes. It might not come at all. Be thankful you got a bus.
How do we get over our car addiction?
I think it's just that habits are really hard to break. Mm. Once in inertia, the object in motion will keep in motion. Object that it's stopped will remain at standstill. So because of the inertia, most Malaysians would continue doing what's comfortable, and really most Malaysians would just choose what's the fastest and most reliable way of getting from point A to point B.
Right.
Most people won't purposely choose, okay, I want to drive, I want to take public transport. Most people will just look, okay, what's the fastest way of getting between, let's say, from home to work, home to shopping, or from my, let's say I'm at the office, I want to pick up my kids. So those are the sort of decisions that people make. And right now, because of how our infrastructure is sort of built and coordinated, it favors the car. So if we want to get more people to use public transport, we have to make it a reliable alternative to the car, and we have to make it something that more people can use as their primary means of getting around. Because the biggest push towards making someone car reliant is getting a car in the first place. Anywhere in the world, even in Hong Kong, once someone gets a car, that becomes their primary mode of transport, no matter how good the public transport system is. And you know that Hong Kong has a fantastic public transport system.
Even my cousins in Singapore, Nishal, you know, they are addicted to their cars as well. And this is Singapore. And I frequently talk to them, and I frequently talk to them, and I will say that, you know, if I was living in Singapore, I don't think I would want to own a car. You know, I would just drive. I would just take the train wherever I go, because you just come down from your HDB flat. There's a bus station, very frequent bus frequency, and then it connects you to the nearest train station, and you can go anywhere. But they say that, yeah, but, you know, car is just more comfortable. And unless you are, you know, traveling during deep in the peak hour, right, that, you know, it's driving is probably faster than taking the train anyway. How do you see that? So how do we overcome this car addiction? Because even in Singapore, with the best public transport, you know, I mean, incredibly good public transport, you know, many people still prefer taking the cars.
Yeah, because I think in Singapore, a lot of people actually resent that. They aren't able to drive, because a lot of the restrictions on car usage is done by the government. So it's like, you have your COE, you have your very high ERP when you want to travel into the city center. So, and you have very high, because of the very high COE, you have very high car prices, you have very high fuel prices. So I think a lot of Singaporeans would feel that, oh, if driving was more affordable because driving is faster, they'll prefer to drive. So how do we break car addiction? It's, on one hand, is by making car ownership just that much less desirable. And places like Amsterdam and even Hong Kong have shown, you can get public transport ridership, cycling, walking to very high modes. In Hong Kong, 90% of people take public transport to and from wherever they need to go. And in is just because getting a car is not desirable.
Moving back to another big project that is currently being carried out in Malaysia, and that is the East Coast Rail Line. Right now, it's said to be about 56% complete. How important is this project when it comes to improving connectivity in Malaysia, especially the East Coast of Peninsula Malaysia? Who will it benefit? How much of a game changer will this be?
See, it will be a game changer in the sense that it will drastically improve travel times between the East Coast and KL. So, for example, getting from Kota Bharu to KL now can take anywhere from 7 to 8 hours if you drive. More if you take the intercity bus. By ECRL, that should be around 4 hours. So it will improve connectivity in the sense that more people will be able to travel more quickly and more conveniently to the East Coast. And ECRL is also meant to be a freight rail system that connects with the ports in places like Kuantan. So it will sort of to act like a land bridge between Port Klang and the port of Kuantan. So it will also help in that sense, though that's, I think it's a bit more shaky in that respect.
What would you say would be a key difference between, let's say, a KTM and an ECRL?
See, the biggest difference between KTM and ECRL is that KTM is on a meter gauge, gauge meaning the distance between the rails on the track. So, and that means that KTM is something called narrow gauge, as compared to what ECRL uses. ECRL uses something called a standard gauge, which is wider standard gauge because standard worldwide. And that allows for faster speeds. So as you know, ETS has a design speed of 160 kilometers per hour. That is the fastest meter gauge can go. We actually have the fastest meter gauge train in the world. And with standard gauge, you can run high-speed rail speeds.
Right.
So you could... That's why the HSR, which I'm sure we'll discuss later, also runs on standard gauge, which would allow speeds of up to 320 kilometers per hour as opposed to 160 on ETS.
Right. So now switching over to Penang, the Penang state government has been pushing for an LRT for many, many years now. It looks like there's finally, it's moving and taking significant steps in that direction. But the federal government has stepped in, taken over the project, essentially. How transformative will be an LRT project in Penang? How will it impact the lives of Penangites?
It would be hugely transformative, in my opinion, because when you look at the geography of Penang, and LRT just makes sense.
Right.
When you look at Penang Island, most of the density, where most of the population is concentrated on the eastern half of the island and on the corridor extending down to Ai Tam. In Penang, there's, because of the heritage area in Georgetown, there's really only one highway, the Lim Chong Eu Expressway, which connects with the Penang Bridge. And with the second bridge. So because of that, because of just the geography of the density on Penang Island, and because of the fact that Penang is split by a huge body of water, the Straits of Penang, and that itself will have a choke point because you can only build so many road bridges, that will lead to the LRT being competitive with driving at worst, and faster than driving at best. Like once you connect all of these major areas of density in Penang, it will be very transformative. And because Penang just can't build the huge network of highways that we have in the Klang Valley, driving will be slower than taking the LRT.
On that note, another project that is being discussed, we move from the north all the way to the south, which is the Singapore JB RTS. How important is this project? And how will it help to ease congestion at the JB-Singapore border?
It would be hugely important to addressing that congestion. It is, by some estimates, the busiest border crossing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
350,000 people cross the JB-Singapore border every day. And I'm sure you've seen like the video on Twitter where someone posted that now even the motorcycle, the big motorcycle lanes on the causeway are now jam-packed. There's just that many people crossing the border every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it will have a huge relief, I think, to congestion. And because it directly connects with Woodlands North MRT station in Singapore, it will also allow more people who are working in Singapore to access their place of work very conveniently. And that will bring down congestion by a lot.
So now let's talk about the big one. Nothing has been approved yet in that sense, but loads of discussions. They are looking at a lot of proposals right now, and how does the government actually tackle it if that's the direction that they're going to go with, and that is the HSR. Currently, what it's been in proposal stages is that a HSR that connects Singapore to Kuala Lumpur. Does Malaysia need a Singapore to Kuala Lumpur high-speed rail?
I would say yes.
Okay.
KL to Singapore is the busiest international flight route in the world. 4.9 million seats every day. You've got dozens of intercity buses that go up and down KL to Singapore every day. And this doesn't also include like the number of people who used to take the train every day from KL to Singapore. So the demand is there, I think, for HSR.
So how would you respond to arguments that say that you know, when we look at China has HSR, but the argument is that, you know, they have about a billion people, you know, that's their population. And then we look at Indonesia as HSR, and then the argument would be, yeah, but they have 10 times bigger population than Malaysia. And the argument, you know, we just do not have the population density to require HSR, and that an ETS would be enough. Like our ETS that connects from Kuala Lumpur to JB is going to be launching soon, like we said, in 2025. So, you know, why not just get on the ETS? It's a four-hour ride. Then you jump on the RTS in JB if you want to get to Singapore, and then go to Singapore that way. Yes, the HSR would definitely bring down the time, travel time, to about 1 hour between Singapore and Kuala Lumpur, maybe even less, 45 minutes perhaps. But is that really necessary given our population? How do you respond to that argument?
Look at Taiwan's HSR. Taiwan has a population similar to Malaysia, about 30 million. Taiwan also has two major cities, one on the northern end, which is Taipei, and one on the southern end, which is Kaohsiung. Which when they started constructing HSR in 1999, their GDP per capita was lower than our GDP per capita right now. So I would say that if Taiwan could afford to build HSR then with a lower population, because remember they have the same population as Malaysia, and with a lower GDP per capita than when they started, certainly we can build HSR as well. We also have to remember that other countries that we might see as poorer or less developed, places like Morocco and Uzbekistan, also have HSR. And then how do you then justify these countries being able to build HSR while we aren't able to build HSR?
How would ETS fit into this picture then? Are we saying that, let's say we have an HSR and let's say it gets approved, and then, okay, now tomorrow we have HSR, Kuala Lumpur all the way to Singapore, maybe a stop in Johor Bahru and things like that perhaps. So is it a case of then we are saying now people have all these different options? You can take an ETS if you want. If you don't mind a four-hour ride, you'll pay a lot cheaper than a HSR. That's one option. But if you want to spend a bit more and take a 45-minute ride to Singapore or Johor Bahru, then you have the HSR option. Are we looking at that sort of arrangement if it really exists, right? If a HSR really exists, gets built, is it that case? Or are we looking at, okay, then nobody takes the ETS anymore and we just take the HSR?
Well, yes, like you said, actually, you would have more options. Hmm. Those who want a faster ride would take the HSR. Those who want to save more would take ETS. It's actually the case right now in Taiwan. Those who want a faster ride will take the HSR. Those who want to save some money, who don't mind waiting, who don't mind a longer ride, they'll take the Taiwan Railways train. That will be the same case here. And what the HSR in Taiwan did was it made flights from Kaohsiung to Taipei and vice versa redundant. Once the HSR went online, so few people were taking flights that flight route no longer exists. So if you're looking at it from like a sort of a climate angle, mm-hmm. how do we reduce our emissions? How do we get to the path of net zero by 2050? That's one way of looking at it. Because short flight routes like KL to Singapore are a huge contributor to that.
Yes, because that is an argument that some people bring up as well. Those who are against the HSR, they say HSR is going to cost billions and billions of ringgit. And what's the point of doing that? If you do the simple math, is that even if you give people free flight tickets to Singapore, you'll be saving a lot more money than you know, actually building the HSR. How do you respond to that?
It's not just KL to Singapore on its own. It's also bringing rail services to places like Melaka and Muar, places that currently don't have direct rail services. And it also includes things like the old canard about bringing economic development, which can't be measured just from the sticker price of the project and then concluding that, no, we should just give free flight tickets. So in that sense, also, like I said, it just provides more options. It allows for KL to be more of KLIA to be more of an international flight hub, because a lot of these flight slots are now taken up by flights just to Singapore because of how popular that red route is. So if you want to, say, take flights from KLIA to much further afield destinations internationally, you'd have to free up those slots. And the best way to do that is by HSR.
So looking ahead, what do you envision? What's your hope for the future of public transportation in Malaysia beyond the Greater Kuala Lumpur?
Beyond Greater Kuala Lumpur, I'm hoping that, like I said, every city or town with a population above 250,000 will get at least two frequent, all-day frequent bus lines. I'm hoping that, you know, we don't have to resort to sort of informal public transport services anymore, like sort of jeepneys or vans, that people outside of Klang Valley essentially can have the sort of dignified, frequent and comfortable public transport that we've in the Klang Valley sort of come to expect with things like the MRT and LRT, but with maybe things like, for them, a BRT, for example.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Nishal. That was Nishal Muniandi, public policy researcher and committee member of Transit Malaysia. This conversation is also available on podcast. You can find us on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.